Hello and welcome to another episode of the Successful Home Ownership Show with your host, Richard McKenzie, out of the greater Cincinnati area. Today's episode is titled, Buying a Property from Afar. That being an investment property from an out-of-state investor, working with one of our friendly and very experienced Cincinnati real estate agents here in town. And we do have several who are working with out-of-state investors, a lot of them from California, not that that matters. But what I want to do is give you investors out there some tips on buying a property and staying out of trouble and having the best chance of success from not only picking the right property out, but also fixing the right things and keeping your tenants from suing you. Yes, that's important, keeping them safe and from suing you. And then also maintaining it from afar and not throwing a whole lot of money down the drain. But in fact, having a good cash flow, having a good investment that you can feel comfortable and sleep at night owning and using as one of your passive incomes. Okay. So let's get started. I'm going to use an example of property that I inspected yesterday, and it is a 1880 small house, about 1,300 square feet. It is two stories, and it had an addition put on the front, and it very well may have had an addition put on, or I should say it had an addition put on the back, the first floor, and it may have actually been an addition on the front as well, because that was also a crawl space. Okay, so let's talk about this property, and I'm going to use examples from this to weave a tapestry of things to look for and to watch out for. So if you are listening to this, you may want to have a pad of paper if you're old school. If you're not, you want to have your notepad open on your phone so you can jot stuff down with your finger and remember these things. So we always look at the outside, of course, first. And you want to make sure your biggest investment, your biggest expense, capital expenditure, is not going to break you right off the bat, that being the roof. For this particular item, I would suggest you make sure you have a dimensional shingled roof, architectural, whatever you want to call it, dimensional fiberglass shingle, because you're going to get 25 or so years out of that. Some people say 30. I'm not particularly sold on the 30 number. I've not really seen one get 30 for this particular type shingle, but you want to make sure it's a good installation. Don't go cheap and don't end up with a three-tab fiberglass, 20-year, which really probably only lasts 15, and you end up not getting a whole lot of life out of that shingle. Plus, it's lighter weight, more prone to wind damage, hail damage, etc. All right, so this particular roof, this was a good installation. I'd say it was about maybe 7 years old, flashing around the chimney done well, around the plumbing stack boot. And I really didn't have any complaints about the roof. It also had two small areas of rubber membrane roof. Rubber membrane roofs, depending on the thickness, depending on the quality, they can last the same length, 25, 30 years. But a lot of the material you read say they only last 10 to 15. I'm not sure who I believe, but I will say that the seams need to be reworked and repatched over time, even if the main body of the roof, the EPDM rubber membrane flat type or shed type roofs, like the back porch, that addition, the front porch, they had the EPDM roofs. Sometimes people put the EPDM over the tin roof and to give it more life, or they just repaint the tin roof. Whatever the solution is, that's something you want to make sure you have well covered, no pun intended. All right. Secondly, investors out there, make sure you got a place for people to park. People will complain, and you'll get probably better rent if you have a place that they can park. Your rents will probably be higher. One garage space is even going to get you a better rent, of course. But that being said, you want to have a place that people can put a car. If your property is only going to be on the bus line and that's all you're going to be, you're probably going to be in the low rent district. That's a different category. But if you have an investment property that you want to have, you know, somebody like somebody with a steady job, whether they're blue collar, white collar, not really going to make any judgments here. It could be a nurse, could be a carpenter, could be a maintenance manager. Boy, if you can rent to a maintenance manager, enough said about that. You can actually help them take care of your place. All right. The stuff around the house really does matter, really does affect it. You don't want to have trees real close to the house or up against it, or you're going to be ending up in the future with a windstorm issue with a broken branch that crushes part of the house or causes damage to the roof, and that's going to cause future expenditures. So it's kind of like a pay now or pay later. And also keeping vegetation away from the house also tends to help reduce the chance for having carpenter ants, carpenter bees, and termites, because those things trap moisture. When people don't see the house and they don't have a good maintenance team to take care of the house, and they're really trying to do things on the cheap, that's going to cause you to have issues in the future. Get your person here who is maybe 2,000 miles away to at least cut all the vines 3 feet away from the house, clear a path around the house so you can see what in the world is going on. This house did have that problem. It had vines all around the house, up against the house, and to me that is a problem. So you want to, especially on the back, and on the back of the house where the porch had this, it was covered in vines on all around it, and up against the house where the basement single pane glass windows were, that created a very large pit, which maybe it was a window well at one time, I'm not sure, but it is a place where water is going to flow, the path of least resistance, water is going to flow down there and is going to want to clog up and cause water into the basement, not to mention put hydrostatic pressure on the rear wall, foundation wall. So get the vegetation away from the house. Fix any low-lying areas against the house by adding dirt appropriately, pack it in so water flows away from the house, and make sure all of your gutter downspouts are draining properly and drain water. I like to say throw water 10-15 feet away from the house. Then, 2,000 miles away, you can sleep like a baby because you're not worried about your place flooding. Really, really important, and definitely a lesson learned for property managers. So take it from an inspector who actually has managed property in the past, which I have, okay? And basically, you want to keep your tenants from calling you. Keep your tenants from calling you, yes. So do these things now or pay later. I have heard a wise saying previously, it's actually part of something I just read this morning, which I found absolutely hilarious, and it basically was some wise sayings from an old hillbilly, and I'm just going to read one of them that was in there, and basically it said, if you don't take the time to do it right, you'll find the time to do it twice. If you don't find the time to do it right, you'll find the time to do it twice. I can't say that any better than that. All right. So that being said, fix the stuff outside. Keep the vegetation away from the house. Fix the low-lying areas. And underneath this porch, make sure your inspector looks under porches, looks under decks and so forth. That's where some of the low-lying areas, people build decks and porches on graded, negatively graded areas, so water is underneath the porch flowing towards the house in heavy rain. You don't want that. You heard me mention earlier also, at the rear was that single pane aged glass, well, of course it's glass window. There were one, two, three, four, five glass single pane aged metal frame windows around the house. Those are things that can cause a tenant in the future to call you up and say, my house was broken into, because those are easy to break into. A glass block window of average size, probably in this current market, is $200 installed, and they don't charge extra for maybe $250, maybe $300. They don't charge extra for putting that air vent, the fold-out vent in there. Okay, so that actually will help ventilate your basement. You add the glass, you put the glass block there, and you have a stronger wall, you have water resistance, and you don't have to worry about somebody breaking into your house when your tenant is there. Also, of course, make sure they have renter's insurance. I'll just say that. Also, make sure if you have fireplaces, I would put in your contract with them that they can't use the fireplace. Why do you want extra fires in your property? That's just a risk. So just something to think about there. All right. Also, if they have, if you allow pets, make sure you have something in there about somebody getting bitten and who is responsible and all that stuff. So consult with a lawyer about that. I was greeted, making no judgments, and when I got to this house yesterday, I was greeted by a pit bull and something that was not a pit bull, but was a larger version of a pit bull. It was like an industrial strength pit bull, but really wasn't called a pit bull. I'm not good with brands of dogs or breeds of dogs, so I really don't know what it was, but it stepped on my foot once and it hurt. All right, so let's go ahead on inside. And of course, this house didn't have central air conditioner, so that's why I just about skipped that. But make sure you get the age of your air conditioner. If you are investing in properties, you know the things that can put you in the poorhouse quickly and cause you to have negative cash flow. And those are things that affect, number one, your foundation walls. That's number one. Number two, your roof. Number three, your air conditioner. Number four, your heating system, whether it be a boiler or whether it be an individual forced air gas furnace. Okay, so those four things you want to keep good cash flow, not have to replace those anytime soon, and then you should be in a positive cash flow situation after that. Okay, so we covered the air air conditioners, 15 to 20 years, 15 to 20 years, 15 to 20 years, okay? All right. Inside the house. This house was so packed full of stuff, it made it nearly impossible to inspect every window. In fact, there were 16 windows in this house, and I only had access to, I think I only opened and closed one. Why? Because I'm stupid? No. I couldn't get to them. There was, in an 1880 house, you don't have closets. You have wardrobes, which are pieces of furniture that hold clothing. Then this particular tenant had clothing racks on wheels. And then they also had, they just had stuff. I'll just leave it at that. Just lots of stuff. It was so crowded in this house that you really couldn't get to a whole lot of stuff. So, but all the windows were the single pane wooden pulley windows. They really, for all intents and purposes, need to be replaced because A, they're totally antiquated. B, they're an easy break-in hazard. C, they tend to have a lot of the lead paint flakes and dust all around them and in the frames. I don't need to say anything more about that. If you want your tenants complaining about lead paint and calling the city on you to come inspect something, which you really don't want that to happen, then replace them with vinyl replacement windows and be done with it. So that's an investment that you may want to make. You'll have to find one of the window contractors and get a couple, three quotes and then get that done. That's something you definitely want, to sleep well at night knowing that you have a good investment in this property for that. Okay, this particular house was a very interesting layout because the back addition was put on and it was a crawl space and there was a bathroom. That bathroom was not working because all the pipes underneath in the crawl space, according to the tenant, the owner had not fixed them and there were considerable leaks, so that needed to be fixed. So that's one project for this particular investor. Number two, the crawl spaces for a house like this really are not that accessible. There was also a crawl space in the front of the house, which had a little opening that I could... I put my body in there about halfway, my chest hanging in there, and taking a lot of pictures with a very... and using a very strong flashlight, high lumens flashlight, and I was able to get a lot of pictures. Saw some stored wood on the floor in the crawl space in there on the dirt, and I could tell there were some termite shelter tubes on it. The termites were eating up that wood. Don't store wood on a dirt floor. Just don't do it. Matter of fact, don't store wood on a concrete basement floor in the basement, because that's going to attract a lot of termites as well. Okay, it's best to keep wood stored off of the floor, whether it's dirt or concrete. So I've jumped a little bit to the basement, so I want to back up a little bit to talking about plumbing fixtures. For a house that is, let's say, 70 years old or more, it is worth, investors here listening to this, it's worth spending your $300 to $350 to get a licensed plumber to do a sewer scope on that property. You want to know that the main sewer line is viable all the way into the street, into the drain. And that's something that licensed plumber, and don't get somebody who just does it on the side as part of the inspection. No, get a licensed plumber. They know what they're doing better than that. And also I would suggest too, and I did this when I was managing property, make sure you have a very strong words in your lease that says, if a plumber is called to the house, if any maxi pads, tampons, diapers, or any other material other than toilet paper is found in when they snake out the drain and clear it, then you are stuck with the plumbing bill plus $100 for pain and misery. Just something like that, okay? Consult your lawyer on making up your strong lease, and there are examples of that on the internet, so you probably don't have to reinvent the wheel. All right, so we want to make sure that all the plumbing runs freely. We have already talked about windows, and for that matter, lead paint. Just keep everything well painted inside. Do not have flaking paint all over the place, and that's one of the reasons in the bathrooms that it's worth spending the money to put an exhaust fan in that is in your lease, that the tenant has to use the exhaust fan with every shower or bath, okay? That should be in there too, because you don't want the paint flaking in your basement from the walls and ceiling and forming mold on there, and that's gonna happen if you don't have a way to ventilate. Even if there's a window, they're not gonna open the window in Cincinnati in 0 degrees. Ain't gonna happen. You know that, okay? So it's going to be hot and steamy in there. Paint's going to start bubbling and flaking and all that stuff. And that's going to be a problem down the road, okay? All right. So let's talk about outlets also and electric. This is a big one. This is the one, in addition to not having smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors, this one can get you into trouble with the city, fire department, etc. So, I just made a plug there to say, make sure you follow your city's ordinances about rental property on having fire extinguishers, smoke detectors, and carbon monoxide detectors. Okay, follow the rules and stay out of trouble. Okay. Also, you want to put in your lease that if the tenant removes them, there's a fine, or that's a violation of lease. I've gone into I don't know how many places and people have taken them off. Don't put them in the kitchen. That's a stupid place to put them. But put them in places that you're supposed to. follow the rules. Most of the metropolitan housing authorities of whatever city you're in have it plainly stated on there. You don't have to spend a whole lot of effort to figure that out. Okie dokie. Back to the outlets. We test the outlets either with a two-prong tester because we know they're ungrounded because maybe they have knob and tube wiring or ungrounded sheath wiring, or we test with our three-prong tester, and it's either going to show that it's grounded or it's going to show that it's not grounded. Then we're going to take the panel cover off of the main electrical panel, and if we don't see any ground wires in there, we know that those outlets that are three-prong that tested grounded are cheated. The electrician or electrician wannabe has jumped the neutral, which is a no-no for wiring. And typically when we have that, we can look at the panel and it doesn't have a city inspection sticker on it. So that's one way to get in trouble as well. So make sure you do put in for the permit, do it right. If you're going to rent property, just stay out of trouble and you'll have fewer evictions, you'll have fewer fines, you'll have fewer cities knocking down your or calling you up and making appointments with you to make inspections. It's just easier to pay now instead of pay later. Remember the saying that I said, do it right or you end up finding the time to do it twice. Okay, this particular inspection, when I'm taking the cover off the electrical panel, the light started flickering. Why? Because I'm stupid? No. The breakers on the left side started slipping down. That is really scary. So I stopped immediately, kind of made sure that the panel cover was tight enough to not let those breakers move anymore. And I told the real estate agent and the person renting that they absolutely need to get the owner to get an electrician there that day ASAP, or you could be into a arcing situation, which is going to cause overheating and a fire and electrocution, all really nasty bad stuff. So that needed to be fixed ASAP. Wiring can be one of your biggest nightmares and cause, I mean, I have gone into I don't know how many places where they have ungrounded outlets at the kitchen sinks, and the owner is just not taking care of getting that upgraded to a GFCI scenario, which is ground fault circuit interrupter, which, by the way, you can have on ungrounded outlets because it trips off the neutral. I'll repeat, the GFCI receptacle will trip off of the neutral. So they do work. I'm not a licensed electrician, but I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express, but I know that from experience and other electricians who have told me that and assured me of that, and I know how to test those. So get your electric right in your houses. Put the GFCIs at any water source. Make sure your electrical panel is not going to cause issues, your outlets. Make sure that your grading outside is good and water is draining away from the house and your gutters. Make sure you don't have vegetation up against the house. Richard, you're naming so many things, I don't know how I'm going to make any money at this. Well, you will if you do things right. There's sunk cost. There's a principle, economic principle called sunk cost, where you do have to pay to play, and you do have to put a certain amount of money into things and not look at everything doing it on the cheap. But if you do it right, you are going to have fewer calls. Fewer calls in the middle of the night telling you that your water heater is out and it's 0 degrees in Cincinnati and it's Saturday and you've got to get a plumber out there who's going to charge double on a Saturday with a foot of snow outside. Maybe he charges you triple. That's going to lead me to talking about the water heater also. This particular house, the water heater was 28 years old. How long does a water heater typically last? Well, 28 is not the number. It's usually 15 to 20. So I told them, if you're going to renovate this place, and unfortunately the current occupant's probably going to be moved out because they are going to increase the rent and all that stuff, which is always what happens, usually what happens. I won't say always. I would replace the water heater simply because you don't know how much more life is left in it. It's probably not a whole heck of a lot. It's already 8 years past its typical length of life. So that's something that needs to be taken care of. In the city of Cincinnati, if you're buying property on the internet, and I'm going to pull this up while I'm talking, is a lead water supply line map that you can use. It is, I'm going to read it out to you. If you're buying in Cincinnati, buying in the Cincinnati area, they have little things that say lead, non-lead, public side, private side, etc. And the website is G as in George, C as in Charlie, www.maps. So gcww.maps.arcgis.com. ArcGIS is A-R-C as in Charlie, George Igloo, S as in Sam.com. That will pull up the city of the Greater Cincinnati Water Works service line information. And it's very helpful, especially if you're listing a property or buying a property. Why? Because it will let you know if you have a lead water supply line, either on the private side or the public side. Why is that important? Well, good question. Because in the city of Cincinnati, if a property changes hands, if it has a lead water supply line, that has to be replaced with that real estate transaction. You can look that one up. If you don't believe me, look it up. And that's a very important principle to know, because that is going to cost a certain amount of money. Now, of course, as you would expect, a lot of things are kind of racketized. So whether you look at this as a racket or not, but there happened to be a list of plumbers that work with the city of Cincinnati who have approvals for that replacement work. And there is a discount program for getting that replaced. Well, how about that? I wonder how you got to be on that list. I don't know. Don't want to make any guesses, but you got to pay to play. That's all I know. That being said, you do need to replace the lead water supply line. And for anything that is like older than 1920, you have a real good chance of it still having a lead water supply line, even in some of the higher end neighborhoods. People don't realize that. And when we do inspections in some of the higher end neighborhoods, sure enough, there's a lead water supply line. When we have a water cooler upstairs in the kitchen and people are getting water out of water cooler, but not the tap, before I even go in the basement, I'll often do a gut check. I better pay attention to what the water supply line composition is, and I'll bet it is lead. So if there's an extreme bend in the water line, a real sharp curve, or if you see the water line and it looks like it swallowed an egg, okay, like a snake swallowed an egg and it's got a big bulge in its throat, that typically means that you have a lead water supply line. You can also scrape it with a key or whatever, a screwdriver, and if it's shiny, bright copper looking or brass, then it's going to be either brass or copper. If it is metal colored like nickel, it could be galvanized steel, which that also needs to be replaced. Not because of hazards, but because of impedance on the ability for water to flow through it because it corrodes from the inside out. Okay? The lead is going to be a very dull looking, and it's going to be solid lead, and that doesn't change the copper color. It's going to be lead, and they do have to cut that line out at the water main, and then cut it there, run a new line from the water main into the foundation, through the foundation wall, and set up a new meter and everything that way. And that way you are covered. Yeah, it ain't cheap. And the number of feet they have to dig up in the yard really calculates on the price. So if it's a really long run between the front foundation wall and the street, which for most of the older houses, because land was very scarce near the river or wherever the city's origin started at the earliest, oldest houses, land was a premium. You really didn't have a whole lot of room between the front foundation wall and the sidewalk and then that little strip of land between the sidewalk and the streets, generally where the water meter happens to be. That's usually not a whole lot of digging that they have to do. All right. I have really covered a whole lot of stuff. The other thing I didn't cover a whole lot was the foundation walls. Make sure your inspector inspects your foundation walls really well. And for some of these older properties that the basements are not finished, unless you have an extraordinary number of stored items, which yesterday's house did, but for some reason I was able to contort my body in ways to weave between the boxes and bins and other crap that was there to see the foundation walls, and they look pretty good. I really was shocked that the back one had little micro cracks, little hairline cracks, no offset on the wall. The stairs were flush against the wall. The stairs where they meet the floor hadn't moved. The feet where it touches the floor had not moved. That's always a good sign. Not a whole lot of movement going on with this house, even though there were two low-lying areas where I know water was going towards the house, very surprisingly. So that was a good thing. And the last thing is going to be the furnace. Furnace, of course, is one of those big four. This furnace was huge, was not a gravity furnace. It had a belt-driven fan blower for distributing the heat. But very low efficiency, 55-60% probably, which means you're wasting about half the gas that you have coming in the house. But it was Armstrong brand, probably as old as Louis Armstrong in this case. That was a joke, of course, but Armstrong Air Company now is owned by, I don't know, maybe Goodman bought them, I'm not sure, they buy everybody, but anyway, Armstrong brand, and the font on it led me to believe, as well as the tag, that it was probably about 70 years old. Whoa, that's really old for a furnace. Since the average lifespan of a furnace is 25, 30 years. Some people say 20 to 25 years, depending on the brand. But I will say that when you are old like this one, okay, whether it's a York or an Armstrong or the old Williamson blue ones that last almost forever. People say, well, how long is it going to last? The better question to ask is, how long do you want it to last? Because you could, almost ad infinitum at this case. These things are made so well, they put themselves out of business. Because they wouldn't die. The furnace just won't die. It's going to be inefficient. It's going to have an increased chance of a cracked heat exchanger because of the age, and metal just over time wears out, especially with heat cool, heat cool, heat cool. That metal's just going to fatigue, and rust starts, and the higher temperature you have and get a little bit of moisture on there, you start getting some oxidation, and the higher temperature plus moisture makes things oxidize that much faster. So if your basement's real dry, that's going to help keep that lasting longer. But if you're an investor, do you want to risk the carbon monoxide thing because of a cracked heat exchanger, or is it worth it to you to not spend $4,000 to $5,000, or maybe somewhere between $3,000 and $5,000, plus possibly some ductwork replacement, because the ductwork that was on this thing was so inefficient, so oversized, and the airflow is just really poor, that you are going to have to spend some money at some point to get these things replaced. So it's a pay now or a pay later again. So your furnace, definitely you want to get the age of it, you want to test it out, and again, reiterating on the big four, the foundation walls, the roof, the furnace, and the air conditioner. You can throw a fifth one in there probably, and that would be the electric. And then maybe a sixth one in there would be what the composition of your water main is, okay? And then your sewer could be a seventh one, making sure that your sewer line is not clogged, not impeded by tree roots and so forth, or just broken and shifted. The hillier your yard is, the more chance you have of shifting, okay? So that's something to think about as well. I really hope this has given investors and realtors who are working with investors a whole lot of useful information to help you get to the closing table, get you to the finish line, and get into a positive investment mode for buying properties and having a positive cash flow for the future for that passive income. All right, so this has been the Successful Home Ownership Show with your host, Richard McKenzie, and thank you for listening.